With the All-Star break going on, I decided to bring on former Locked On Red Sox host and the current host of the Red Seat podcast, Jake Devereaux, to look at the good, bad, and a lot of the ugly from the Red Sox first half.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to welcome you back into the Locked On Red Sox podcast, and thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. I'm your host, Massachusetts Pirates team insider Jake Inizuski, and today I was joined by Jake Devereaux, who is actually a former Locked On Red Sox host and currently hosts the podcast for Over the Monster called The Red Seat. And he also writes articles for Over the Monster blog site as well. So Jake and I looked into the good, bad, and the ugly of the Red Sox throughout the first half of the 2022 season and spoke a little bit about at the end of the episode on what we think not only the Red Sox will do at the deadline, but how we predict the second half will all play out for the Boston Red Sox. Now let's get into my conversation with Jake. We are here with the host of the Red Sea podcast and writer for Over the Monster, Jake Devereaux. So Jake, we got two Jakes on the podcast today. You're a former Locked On Red Sox podcast host. So does it feel a little bit weird as kind of as a reunion or coming back to the old podcast?
Yeah, it definitely feels weird, but I'm like super excited to be on here for the first time since 2019. And, you know, we were just talking about it before we got started on this podcast, but it feels pretty similar to that 2019 season. So it's, you know, I think I'm the right Jake to have on for this show today.
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, it is eerily weird, you know, as you know, you mentioned before we hit record is, you know, coming off of the 2018 World Series win and, you know, last season, obviously the Sox coming two wins away from the World Series, surprising everybody. And, you know, I feel like especially with how 2019 offseason went, how this last offseason went, you know, both teams sort of expected that if they kept similar guys around, maybe added one or two pieces, they would be right back in the exact spot that they were. But that's just nowhere close to this to the idea that's happening right now.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. I mean, I remember feeling like this team was underperforming all year in 2019. And I think we've had the same exact situation going on here in 2022. So, and even the contract stuff is pretty similar. Thinking about the fact that, you know, Mookie was something that was always a talking point for us in 2019 and what was going to happen with him. And, you know, you can't mention anything about the 2022 season without mentioning the looming contract situation with Xander Bogaerts after this season and Devers after the following season. So, you know, it's really been just something we can't get away from.
How tough was it for you when you saw the picture that, you know, surfaced over the All-Star break of, you know, Benny, Bogey in you know, their new uniforms with, you know, JD, Xander and Devers? Because it was really tough for me to get a blast from the past like that.
Yeah, it was tough. It was emotional. And because, you know, as you know, doing this podcast 5 days a week, and I've been covering the Red Sox now for about 7 years, you know, when you're paying so much attention to these teams, these players become so important to you emotionally, and you become so invested in these guys because you're covering every little thing. And, you know, seeing all of those guys together, it was like, man, that could have been us still, you know, that could have been this team. If just a couple things went differently, if some negotiations went differently, if other deals weren't given out, you know, there's a pathway where you can kind of piece that together and imagine that future. And it's sad, but it also made me happy seeing the picture because, you know, I was happy for those guys getting together again and kind of getting to rekindle the spirit of 2018 and the friendships that those guys crafted together.
Very true. And, you know, one guy who, he wasn't as big of a part of the Red Sox per se. That is also interesting in the All-Star game too is, you know, Martin Perez. And it's pretty crazy to see the incredible season that he has had. You know, I don't think any of us would have guessed that he would be producing at the level he is with the Texas Rangers. But, you know, it is pretty weird as a Red Sox fan seeing some of these guys who have made an impact for this team now playing in the All-Star game.
Yeah, it really is. Martin Perez is just he's been one of the most confounding pitchers. When he was with the Red Sox, he always had these underlying metrics that got you really enticed because he was somebody who generated a tremendous amount of weak contact, but still the results weren't really there for him. So it was actually kind of cool to see it come together for him this year, because I think that, you know, that next gear has always kind of been in there for him. And it was awesome to see him put that together in a different place. And sometimes that's exactly what guys need. I mean, I think we saw that with Benintendi too. He was really scuffling here and then changed scenery to Kansas City and became who he was again. So sometimes guys just need a change of pace.
Very true. And, you know, obviously the scenery sometimes makes a huge difference. You know, we saw with what Andrew Benintendi has been able to do over there with the Kansas City Royals. And, you know, luckily we got a report this last week that he will most likely not be in a Yankees uniform, which I was really nervous about. Yeah. But I think that this All-Star break is a very much needed break, reset, whatever you want to call it, for this Red Sox team, especially with how disastrous they ended it with the Yankees series in those final two games. And, you know, obviously we saw Chris Sale having that devastating injury as well. But, you know, you brought up sort of how this season has been similar to 2019. It is pretty crazy how, you know, it started in April, so miserable. Then May and June, it seemed like that they were starting to kind of figure it out. And then July really seems like we're back in April again, but with just much, much more injuries. But, you know, for the listeners, you know, before we get into this sort of thing that I thought was be kind of cool with you is, you know, talking about the good, bad, and the ugly of the first half of the Red Sox. Just give the listeners a little bit of insight on what your overall thoughts have been for the first half for the Red Sox in just a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think it all starts with the offseason. And, you know, we preview the season quite a lot before getting into it. And on our intro episode to previewing the season, we all looked at the roster. It was a four-person podcast for that one at Over the Monster. And we were like, man, there are just so many holes here. There were holes in the bullpen. There were holes in right field. Uncertainty at first base. There was just a lot of questions for this team going into the year. And I think it all starts with the fact that Bloom really didn't address those. And it was kind of befuddling to me because, you know, looking at this thing from the last couple of years, you know, 2020 was a very transitional year. 2021, the team got a lot further than we thought they would at that point, making it two wins away from the World Series. So I was really targeting the 2021 offseason as the offseason that Bloom should jump in and really like build this thing and make the Red Sox into a formidable weapon who can not only, you know, reach the World Series, but potentially win it. And I think it was a missed opportunity. And I think maybe that start at the beginning of April was a little bit of a letdown from the fact that the guys didn't get that reinforcement that they were looking for. And I think it's a testament to Cora's management that they were able to have the incredible June that they were able to have. And, you know, I'll remember back to that 18-4 stretch that they had in June, which was just remarkable baseball. But once those injuries started piling up and some of the guys that had been overperforming started to see that regression come back in, you know, guys like Waka, who were definitely overperforming, Pivetta, you know, all those guys, their expected ERAs were quite a bit higher than what they were actually pitching to on the field. And then coupled with all of the injuries that you had mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's just been a lot of wind taken out of the sails of these players. And then, you know, no pun intended. And then Chris Sale gets hurt. And then, you know, that's sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back. So, it's been a very up and down season, but one I think that could have been a lot better had there been better planning in the beginning of the year. So I do shoulder a lot of this blame on Chaim Bloom's roster construction.
I hope you guys have been enjoying my conversation with Jake, but hopefully at the end of this second half, the Red Sox can have a ring on their finger and ultimately hoist the trophy up for the World Series Championship. But if you're looking for a ring or any fine jewelry for that special someone or just a friend or family that you want to give a present to, BlueNile.com is the perfect place to get that. They have their expert jewelers available 24/7 to help you find the perfect piece for either that perfect someone or for just a friend or a family member that you want to give a present to or something like that. So they also help you find the perfect diamond shape, size, and clarity, and also the setting style as well. And if you're looking to get engaged or get a piece of jewelry for that special someone, they are the perfect place to get that because they will handcraft that perfect piece for that special someone in order to make each and every single piece of jewelry one of a kind. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And going now is Blue Nile's anniversary sale. You can save up to 40% on classic fine jewelry pieces and 25% on engagement ring settings. Plus, every order is insured, ship-free, and available and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. So shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. Now let's get back to my conversation with Jake.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, especially, you know, when you look at the production at first base, I mean, you brought up, you know, center field and right field, and we'll get more into those, you know, specific positions later in the episode. But, you know, bullpen wise too, you know, one of my biggest frustrations and, you know, for all the listeners, like I've had maybe like four like massive rants about the closer position because I don't know what it is, like especially with like some of these late games. When Lauren isn't able to like record and I do the episode solo, I don't know what happens. Usually it happens when Jake Diekman comes in, but he just blows the lead and yep. You know, we go into extra innings and it's just like a heartbreaker. And then I got to come on here directly after the episode and all that frustration just piles up, especially with the closer situation, especially in like April and May. And it's so difficult for me to just not just get super upset about yeah. about the current situation. But I think also, you know, some of the specific moves that he neglected to make have really hurt the team, but also some of the moves in terms of depth wise, I think have been huge for the Red Sox, especially during this injury ridden July. I mean, when you look at some of the guys who have come up big, and we'll talk more about this later, but you know, Cutter Crawford, Josh Winkowski, you know, even like how Tanner Houck has been able to fit in some of those long reliever roles. Just some of that depth that, you know, some of these Red Sox fans are like, why are we signing these crappy minor league deals for no reason? Well, you know, you're seeing it right here.
Yeah, that's one thing that you have to give Bloom a lot of credit for is the depth in the system. And, you know, minor leagues, you've got 180 guys down there and not all of them are useful major league depth. And Bloom has really built up that major league depth over the last couple of years with a lot of shrewd moves. And I think that's one of the things that we've seen from his days in Tampa Bay is how he values, you know, adding to the team at each different level and how important it is to have a good farm system that you can really draw on. And you're absolutely right. I mean, this team would be far worse off if it wasn't for all of that depth that's been able to come up and produce at the major league level. And unfortunately, Seabold got hurt. But I mean, you mentioned two of the other guys, Crawford and Winkowski, have been a revelation for this team over the last month. So without those guys, it's really difficult to imagine them even being within, you know, three wins over 500 at this point. It'd probably be three wins under 500, if not worse. But, you know, to the flip side of that, going back to the bullpen situation, I think you would probably agree with this, especially for somebody who's so close to it, podcasting about the Red Sox five times a week. I mean, there's probably 10 to 12 wins that you can imagine them having if they just had two more functional back end bullpen arms. Yeah. Yep. You know, it's really, you know, it's been close. There's been so many games that these guys have been in or had the lead late. And we've seen Jake Diekman or Ryan Brazier or Sawamura or, you know, name your guy, give up the game late. And that's the thing that's so frustrating is it's like you look at the standings and you're like, man, this team should be better. This team deserves to be better than they are right now. And it's just something that seems so preventable.
Couldn't agree more. And that has been the one thing that, you know, I've preached really over the past month or so is try explain to me like why the Red Sox are waiting until that August 2nd, that trade deadline, just fix the issue. You know, the writing's been on the wall since April, even before the season even started. And I just don't get it. Like, fix the issue immediately. Stop allowing the bleeding to just continue to go and for, you know, the Red Sox to have these losses that deserve to be wins. And, you know, that's the one thing, you know, when I was making this list, the bullpen was in between, you know, if there was a section in between good and bad, I put the bullpen in between that. Mm-hmm. You know, I could say it's bad. That's super easy for me to do. But, you know, we expected it to sort of be bad going into this season. And, you know, it's been a little bit better at times than we've expected. And I didn't really want to pile on the bads, quite honestly, either. So, you know, really looking at the ERA as well, you know, 3.91 overall. The Sox are 18th, middle of the pack. You know, it's not as bad as we expected. You know, talking about some more positives of, you know, one of the things that I put in the goods is, you know, we talked about some of those young pitchers like Josh Winkowski and Cutter Crawford, but, you know, some of those Woo Sox players having the production that, you know, we didn't expect whatsoever. That could be the first good that we talk about is, you know, also like Jaron Duran when he first came up. Obviously, lately he hasn't been really showing, but Rob Refsnyder as well has really been surprising as well.
Yeah, Rob Refsnyder's contributions to this team have been just amazing. I mean, he's hit incredibly well. He's actually pulled it up here. He's got the third best WRC plus on the team over the last 30 days, with 152 WRC plus. So, I mean, he's been contributing at just an extremely high level. And his versatility of being able to play anywhere in the outfield, that's been huge for the team. And you mentioned Jaron Duran when he first came up, he looked like a different guy, you know, from the Jaron Duran that we saw last year. And he gave the Red Sox a very different look at the top of the order, a guy who's got explosive speed, can really impact the baseball. He looked great. And I think that those contributions from Wister have been huge. And even Franchy Cordero for a little bit of time was able to give the Red Sox a much needed injection of power and production at first base when Dahlbeck was really in the depths of his slump. So, you know, they've gotten a lot from Wister this year, and that's been really nice to see all of the work that the Woo Sox coaching staff has been able to do with the player development there and to get these guys in a good place to succeed in Fenway.
Very true. And, you know, one guy who I believe is the biggest contributor, and I gave him his own little section for the good, is John Schreiber. I mean, over 34 games, 160 ERA. You know, if he started with the Sox at the start of the season and was really able to get a full first half, I mean, we'd be talking about an all-star right now. And it's pretty crazy that as amount of games that he's been in, I could really only one comes up where he didn't play too well, which was just this past week.
Yeah, he's come in and just provided shutdown after shutdown after shutdown against the heart of whatever order the team that they're facing. It's clear that he's become the fireman for Alex Cora, the guy who he relies on for those tight situations. And he's just stepped up, and it's really just amazing to see the transformation he's made with the shape of his pitches and the velocity that he's throwing and just the confidence, too, for a guy who, you know, was essentially discarded by the Detroit Tigers to see the transformation that he's been able to make. I think he is this year's, you know, version of Garrett Whitlock, that guy that we can just really dream about future production and great find behind Bloom.
Very true. And, you know, great comparison with the Garrett Whitlock one. And, you know, the two other goods that I came up with, which, you know, it was tough to think of the goods. Obviously there is some goods, but unfortunately there's more bads than there is goods in this situation. But obviously the three-headed monster of Devers, Bogey, and Martinez, we don't got to go too much into that. That's already obvious what they produce for this team. And then also one that we've already touched on as well is Michael Wacha's very impressive season. I came out of nowhere. I mean, at the start of this season, I didn't really understand why we signed him. And now he's looking like an absolute steal at $7 million 1 year. But I was curious what other goods you might have thought of.
Yeah, I think, You know, you named a bunch of the really good things that have happened with the team, but looking into it a little bit more, I actually think that Alex Verdugo has been a pretty good success story. And Alex Verdugo, when you look at his numbers on the surface, you might say, all right, you know, these aren't that impressive of numbers. But when you really look at the StatCast data and how Alex Verdugo has been impacting the ball and what his expected results have been for this year, he's actually been a tremendous player in a lot of ways, and we've seen a lot of growth from him. And, you know, if you remember back to the Yankees series that happened at Fenway in the last two games of that series and how instrumental he was in the comebacks in game three, especially. And then he had some contributions in game four, you know, when they were kind of riding high off of that second to last Yankee series. He was a big reason why the Red Sox were able to do that. And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about guys being fits for this market, and Boston can be a little bit of a fishbowl in terms of the focus that is put on individual players. And it's clear to me that Verdugo has the makeup to really handle this market. So I've been really happy to see his development. And then I think at the catcher position, Christian Vasquez having just a really resurgent year. It could potentially be his last year here in Boston. There hasn't been a lot of chatter with him and re-signing with the team. So this could potentially be a swan song for him. And he's one of the longest tenured Red Sox. So it's really nice to see him swinging the bat the way that he has been this season and contributing.
Those are two great points. You know, it's especially with Vasquez. I mean, especially with how, I guess, down compared to what we saw in the shortened season of 2020 that we saw last season from him. It's really nice to see him being able to make an impact, especially when, you know, the Sox need it most. He's come up so clutch in just multiple situations. And Alex Verdugo, too, he's turned in to be one of my favorite players. The energy that he has brought to this team ever since he came over from Boston, and really how, you know, not only early in his Red Sox career he handled the Betts situation, but even now when he's handled some adversity and, you know, some criticism, has been really admirable. And, you know, people still remember that, people still forget that this is his second full MLB season. And it's been really incredible to see the growth of him as well. And I agree, from what you see on the surface from Alex Verdugo on his numbers isn't exactly what he's been able to do. But the numbers specifically for the first base position are my first bad. And, you know, 28th in batting average, in the clip of 205. And then they also have the fourth most strikeouts in the MLB in terms of that position, 156 in between Bobby Dalbec and Franchi Cordero.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is they're not producing on the defensive side of the ball either. They're last in the league in defensive runs saved. So you're getting nothing out of that position. And that's probably the single most frustrating position on the team from a position standpoint. I think the bullpen is probably the biggest source of all our frustrations. But first base, it's just they can't catch the ball, they can't field the ball, they can't hit the ball. And we've known that first base has been a problem now for two full seasons. And it's just really surprising that Heim Bloom didn't address that because we all knew. So, you know, why didn't he know? It's very confusing to me.
I think he was just riding on the fact that we were going to see a similar Bobby Dalbec that we saw in the second half. But, you know, we were all hoping that. But you can also see the writing on the wall with, you know, how he's really not able to consistently hit major league pitching. It just shows blatantly in these last 2.5 years or 1.5 years, excuse me. And, you know, one thing that I noticed is, you know, looking at some potential replacements is, you know, obviously we've heard potentially Josh Bell. And one guy who I think would be interesting is CJ Cron. I actually looked at his numbers at Fenway. In 16 games, he has 6 home runs and he's batting .328. I saw that and I go, Heim, what are we doing? This guy has he has 2 years on his contract, and you know, the Red Sox could, he's not a rental, and the Red Sox could really use him next season to bridge the gap in between. Obviously Tristan Cass is coming up, but I think that's a major need that they need to resolve. And, you know, also the right field position is another interesting position. What are they going to do? Is Jackie Bradley going to be on this team for the remainder of this second half? And, you know, how are they going to be able to find production in right field? And, you know, you could also mention center field as well, too. I hope that you are enjoying my conversation with Jake, but I just want to take a second to talk to you about betonline.net, which is your fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs and to find your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds and lines and games. You can also find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. And they're your continued top online resource for all your sports wagering information. So head to betonline.net today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening at this moment in time. BetOnline, where the game starts. Now let's get to back to my conversation with Jake.
Yeah, I think the first base one is really interesting. I feel less inclined like they're going to go for Josh Bell now because he is a true rental. And I do like the idea of what you said with CJ Cron coming in here because clearly he's a very good hitter. CJ Cron's defense leaves a little bit to be desired at first base. So you might be a little bit in the same boat defensively. But the thing that I really like about that is JD Martinez is gone after this year. Mm-hmm. So if Tristan Casas, you believe he's ready, he can be the starting first baseman next year, or at least split time with CJ Cron there. And those guys can alternate between the DH position. Because I think your best baseball team is with Tristan Casas fielding at first base, because that's one of the things we don't talk about enough with him is, you know, for being a huge guy, he's actually a tremendous defender there. So I think that's a great option. And I don't think it would cost a ton to go out there and acquire CJ Cron. Right field and center field are where it gets a lot more tricky, though, because there really aren't that many pending free agents in this upcoming season that are really enticing options for right field. Aaron Judge is the big one. And then after that, it's just kind of a lot of like, you know, mediocre options. So one thing that we've been talking about a lot on the Over the Monster podcast, the Red Seat, is the acquisition of Brian Reynolds from Pittsburgh, who has a tremendous amount of control left with them. It would be a costly acquisition, but it would allow the Red Sox to solidify a position of need without spending a ton of money, using some of that prospect capital that they've built up and getting somebody that's better than whatever's on the market out there for the future season. So I think that the Red Sox ought to probably be buyers and sellers at this deadline. They ought to sell off some of their short-term assets, but they also need to look at the upcoming free agent classes and say, okay, how can we improve our baseball club through the trade market for many years in the future and get some of those controllable assets? And I think that's the way that we've seen Chaim Bloom operate. We haven't really seen him go after too many guys that are pure rental types. He really likes to go after guys that have control left.
I think Reynolds would be a really interesting piece for the Red Sox to add. And, you know, obviously with the Soto news, you know, swirling around over the last few days, it just isn't rational for the Red Sox to go out and, you know, really do a pull of Dave Dombrowski and, you know, fleece this entire farm system for a guy like Juan Soto or even a good major league piece. And I think especially with Reynolds being controllable as he is, I think Bloom could put together a pretty good package for him.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, maybe Durant's part of that package. I don't know what exactly would go back, but it's clear to me one thing from watching this team all year that Durant's future is probably not as a center fielder. He's been a pretty bad defender there. He doesn't have good instincts, but he is somebody who's worth keeping on the field because of his speed and his offensive potential. So ideally, I think you play him in a corner. Ideally, that's probably left field here at Fenway. We did see him used in right field at Yankee Stadium, but right field's quite a bit shorter at Yankee Stadium. So defensively, that's the big question with him. But, you know, if you can get somebody who impacts the game on both sides of the ball like Reynolds, I think you'd give up somebody like Duran to get that done.
Very true. And, you know, it's tough because I really like Verdugo in left field. I feel like that if the Red Sox are going to keep Verdugo long term, left field is the spot for him. He just looks so comfortable out there, and he's really seemed to figure out, you know, the monster and everything like that. But, you know, one guy who we've seen, you know, trying to figure out a whole new position of second base is Trevor Story. And he's done well at that position, but the inconsistency at the plate is just abysmal. It is really tough to get excited about a guy that, you know, we just invested, you know, $160 million for 6 years for. But he still has a lot of room and a lot of years to show us why he is worth that. But, you know, looking at the numbers right now, 221, 15 home runs and 105 strikeouts over 68 hits. And, you know, I looked at, you know, what he's done since that incredible May, has only mustered 17 hits compared to 45 strikeouts.
Yeah, it's not great. And I think that we're seeing a little bit of his departure from Coors Field. We're also seeing a guy who I think is pressing because he just got this big contract. And, you know, we've seen that before. Boston's not the easiest place to play. And a lot of times guys struggle after getting that big deal done. And, you know, Trevor Story talked a lot about how good of a player Xander Bogaerts was and how underappreciated a player Xander Bogaerts was before he signed the deal. And they talked together before they got that deal done. And you see how Xander just handles this market and how every year he comes in, he plays all the games, he hits 300 every year. He goes about his business like clockwork. And I think that as a market, we kind of take him for granted a little bit. And you know, a lot of people were saying after we signed Trevor Story, oh, here we go. If Xander doesn't want to sign, here's his replacement. You and I both know that's not a replacement for Xander, man. That's a nice second baseman to have, but that's no replacement for the production and the leadership that Xander Bogaerts provides. So it's an okay move, but it's not a move that gets me excited.
It was funny when people were talking about, you know, some of the exciting shortstop options on the market, you know, this past offseason. It was funny because really the only guy who, you know, has made it to the All-Star game consistently is Xander Bogaerts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a guy who is always, like you mentioned, consistently hits 300, consistently hits 15 to 20 home runs. And even though, you know, you can bring up his defensive limitations, you know, he's really seemed to improve a lot more at the shortstop position throughout this season. But, you know, that the Trevor Story inconsistency was one of the last bads that I thought of. Before we get into the ugly, do you have anything else?
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah. And then, you know, looking at the ugly, I only really had like two things. It was, you know, we talked about the injuries, the 14 since the start of June that have just really hurt this Red Sox roster. And I don't know about you, this reminds me so much of last August during the COVID outbreak when, you know, even Worcester replacements are getting injured or going on the COVID list. And the Sox just can't catch a break. It seems like each and every single day that there's a new injury that arises. And then the last ugly, which, you know, we talked about at the start of the episode, that is just, it just makes my blood pressure levels so high, is the blown saves, second most behind the Rays, which I actually didn't know. I didn't realize the Rays had blown that amount of saves, but they're at 21 while the Red Sox are at 20. And I'm really curious to see if they do anything at the deadline to fix this closer situation.
Yeah, it's really bad. And, you know, we've talked about how it was predictable and how it should have been addressed. But I have one more ugly for you here. And that is the winless record in series against the AL East. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that they've played 12 series against the AL East and lost or tied every single one of those series. They've got one tie and 11 losses. It's just you can't win in this division if you can't beat the teams in this division. We all know it's the best division in baseball. Going into the season, I looked at it and I was like, okay, if you told me these teams finish, aside from the Orioles, 1 through 4, I'd have believed any order. Blue Jays first, Tampa first, Red Sox first, Yankees first. It seemed probable because all four of those teams are just ridiculously stacked. And I think when you look at the Red Sox and their inability, whatever is causing that to win against those teams, it's just not going to work if you can't figure that out. And they've got a ton of games left against AL East teams for the remainder of this season. So they're going to have to figure that out if they want to do anything with this year.
Very true. And I mean, you brought it up with, especially in terms of the playoffs. I mean, you're going to have to beat those teams when it matters most in October. And this team just hasn't been able to do it. And, you know, just looking up and down, especially just the glaring issue of the bullpen. I mean, we thought about it last year that they couldn't get that far with this bullpen. I don't know how much better this bullpen really is compared to last year. But last thing that I got for you, I was curious sort of what your prediction is for the second half and how you think the Red Sox are going to finish off the season.
That's interesting. I ultimately think that the Red Sox are going to be sellers at the deadline. I think that they're going to sell off Nate Eovaldi, maybe Christian Vasquez, JD Martinez. I think those will all be players that they shop. So I actually think that the Red Sox are going to finish fourth in the division and miss the playoffs. So I hate to be a downer. Like, I want to be optimism guy and come on here and be like, yeah, they're going to make the wild card. But I just think that too many injuries have happened. There are too many holes on this team. And I think that, you know, the fact that they have so few guys in this core that have commitments 2023 and beyond, it's just going to be too enticing for Heim Bloom to sell off a lot of these short-term pieces when the road for you making the playoffs has become so much more difficult at this point.
Yeah, I'm really uneasy about what the second half is going to show. You know, I'm hoping that, you know, it's the opposite of what we saw last season, where it was essentially the downfall of this team. And, you know, we all almost saw them not make the playoffs, which is pretty crazy with them going to the All-Star break with the best record of baseball. But I agree. And this is something that Lauren and I have talked about throughout this season, and we've tried not to bring it up, because we want to focus on 2022, but not 2023. There's just so many question marks. And we could see a completely different depth chart at the start of the 2023 season. But, you know, all I hope for and pray for is that Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers are part of the 2023 Red Sox on opening day. That's all I care about.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. That's the core. And as Poppy said, pay both of those guys. You know, be stupid not to.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more, Jake. Well, I know all the people listening, even if they didn't listen to you back in 2019, want to know how to support you and listen to more of your Red Sox content and see more of not only your podcast, but your great writing and some of your tweets. So where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find all of my writing at overthemonster.com, and you can also subscribe to my podcast, The Red Seat. Anywhere you get your podcasts, it's on the Over the Monster podcast feed. So you'll get my show, The Red Seat. You'll get our prospect show, Red Sox on Deck. And you'll also get the pre-cap show, which previews and recaps each series that the Red Sox play throughout the season. So definitely check that out. And then you can follow me on Twitter at @DevJake, where I'll be telling Heim Bloom to pay both Xander and Devers.
Exactly. Everybody go and check it out. You know, as you heard, Jake's very knowledgeable about this team, does a great job of covering it over on the Red Sea podcast, as well as over at Over the Monster. And it's really been interesting to hear your guys' thoughts as well from this tough season over on the podcast. So, you know, if you're taking a day of not listening to Locked On Red Sox, go over and check that one out. But greatly appreciate you coming on the show, Jake. And we definitely got to do it again, man.
All right, appreciate you having me, and thanks so much.
We hope that you did enjoy this episode, and we thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Now make your second listen Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is your prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. And do you know what's also free? Following Locked On Red Sox on Twitter. It's @LO_Red Sox. And we keep you posted about everything that's happening about the team, as well as post polls, get you involved. And it's overall just a great follow on Twitter. You can also follow myself over there. It's @JakeIggy, as well as my co-host Lauren. It's @LaLaLa with 3 Laws, Lauren with 4 Rs. But as always, we hope that everybody has a great rest of their day, and we'll see you and talk to you tomorrow. But we'll end it how we always end it. Let's go, Sox. Peace.